fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. If Bob didn't say it, then it probably ain't true. This is Primetime Sports with a man who cannot tell a lie. Bob McCown. Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, welcome to, I almost called it Baseball Central, Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network. Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCown. I have gone to the bullpen. I've made a change. Elliot Friedman's coming in for two innings of closing.
You should have gone with the right arm, though. I'm a right-hander.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyhow.
That's better.
I brought Friedman in. Reed's on his way to the shower.
That's like in 93 in the Philadelphia World Series when Gaston got mad because he said the bullpen phone cacked out and the wrong reliever showed up at the mound in that 15-14 game.
Yeah. I couldn't remember.
Either he called for Tony Castillo or Tony Castillo showed up and he went bonkers.
Yes.
Wrong guy.
Anyhow. Oh, look at this. Somebody... Backstage PTS. I know who that is. They tweeted out that we were wearing matching shirts.
And you put your jacket on because of it.
Put my jacket on because of it. Because we both looked at each other and said it looks like we're working at Ponderosa or something like that. Anyhow. Big show ahead for you. Richard Deitch at 520, one of our favorites. We'll get his take on Johnny Manziel. The Little League World Series. Want to talk to him as well about the story that I know, Elliot, you've covered basketball, and I know you follow basketball. This whole Kevin Durant thing that's happening with Drake. This whole Kevin Durant thing, I'm starting to find quite fascinating. So we'll talk.
I saw Drake today.
Really?
In the new Nicki Minaj video.
Oh, I thought you mean you saw him. You saw him in person.
No. He's in the new video.
Really?
Which is full of incredibly suggestive material.
Like hard to imagine that a Nicki Minaj and Drake video would be full of suggestive material.
Well, it's her video, and he shows up at the end, and I couldn't believe I actually watched this today. But
what were you doing?
Well, to do radio and TV today, you have to be up on pop culture. You have to know what the kids today think is cool.
Nobody in this show is ever worried about that.
Yeah, well... What can I tell you? Okay. I'm always like the outlier. So I watched the 4 minutes or so of it today. And yeah, the subtlety, it's not really subtle. It kind of beats you over the head with a pole in terms of what it's trying to tell you.
I might watch that now.
No. Like I said, it's not subtle.
Okay. Mark Cohan, by the way, has told the CFL he's stepping down. He'll join us at 5:40. Bud Shaw, the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Johnny Manziel found out today he's now Johnny Bench, at least for the start of the week. You like that? Instead of Johnny Football, Johnny Bench.
I like
he's
that.
Not starting.
In Ohio.
You know, Johnny Bench in Ohio, of course, Johnny Bench, former ball player. So you see how I worked it? Manziel Bench, Johnny Bench.
It would be perfect if he played for the Bengals.
It would be even better if he played for the Bengals, but he doesn't. Shai Davidia, Sportsnet will join us as well. Your Toronto Blue Jays are busy just tying into the Milwaukee Brewers right now. They have them right where they want them. They're leading the Brewers 7-5 with in the eighth inning, Brett Cecil's on the mound. So if they win this, they will be 2-6 in this road trip.
And I got tickets for Friday night.
Friday night's going to be, Tampa Bay coming in, and then you got Boston, and then you got New York. You got the last game, Derek Jeter's last game in Toronto. Not this weekend, but next weekend. Friday night's game will be good.
I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
How old you have one daughter, right?
Right, 14.
How old was she when you first took her to a baseball game?
Really young. I mean, I would say 5.
Because my boy is 3. It'll be 3 in October.
Right.
And I'm debating taking him this weekend. Just to see if he's interested.
Be prepared to leave in the third inning.
Yeah, but I'm prepared for that. But I just want to take him and see, is he interested in the sights and the spectacle?
I think that's safe. I mean, I think that's fine.
Like, there's no Elmo. Normally, if you know, like, we took him to a Sesame Street dance thing once. And because there was Elmo there, he sat there for the whole thing. And loved it.
I think you're safe. Just be careful in case somebody hits a foul ball.
Of course.
That's my biggest
fear. I'll take my glove.
That's my biggest fear because, you know, kids start turning around. But yeah, he'll be interested until about the fourth inning.
Yeah, that's what I'm debating. Like, is he too young at two and three quarters to take
the game? No, I don't think so at all. I don't think so at all. I would have no problem. I think my daughter's first game was to see Derek Jeter and the Yankees play, come to think of it. Fine. That's good enough.
Now that you have given me the A-OK,
that's good enough.
I'm taking him this weekend.
That's good enough. Just, you know, don't expect him to buy beer for you or anything like that.
Well, I'm going to send him up and, you know, just
he'll have fun.
Max, repeat after me, beer.
It's Saturday, by the way, or Friday. What day are you going? Because Saturday's Junior J's.
Yeah, I want to go Junior J's Junior day J's, so he can.
Junior J's is a riot. I mean, the team does a real good job with it. You get to take the kid goes down the field and can run. And you know what? The new thing they have this year. How old's your son?
He'll be 3 in October.
He'll get to run against DeAndre Navarro on the bases.
He might win.
Oh, he'll win easily. They'll have DeAndre Navarro down there, and little Max will be. Max will probably have to give him about a 40-foot head start.
Well, it's funny because I heard something like this. Like I have a nephew who's 6, James, and they said that he went on a Junior J's day and he ran the bases against a player, or something like that. Or I don't know.
I don't know about that.
Right. I'm not sure, but my family could have been confused. But they said he went on a Junior J's day and he loved it.
Yeah, it is fun. It is fun. And it'll be a good series too. It's against Tampa Bay. So what's that?
A great defensive play.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
By Tolleson and Reyes.
There you go.
Particularly Tolleson.
One out, 7-5. Jays over Brewers. So you didn't do anything today that on Twitter that caused me any undue undue concern after yesterday. I'm not going to ask you to betray a confidence here. Did Lewicki get back to you at all post after it was all done? Just
no, he I went
because guys will sometimes will sometimes do that after, you know, 4 or 5 hours after it's done, just pick up the phone and
no, he did not. I went. He did the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge today at 2 o'clock down at the ACC, and I went there.
Smart.
Just to say, you know,
yep.
Like I've told this story before with Dave Perkins when the Blue Jays reacquired Tony Fernandez in '93. Perkins wrote a scathing column, like, why bring back this guy? He called him a cancer. Mm-hmm. Like, and I remember because I was a pretty new reporter at the time. Perkins went into the clubhouse the next day and basically stuck his recorder in Fernandez's face and said, you know, what do you have to say about all this? Mm-hmm. And when I was older and I got to know Perk a little bit, I asked him about that, and he told me about the philosophy of if you write or say something, you show up at the next available opportunity. So if the person has something they'd like to tell you, you can answer it. And I went today and I let people know I was going to be there, mm-hmm. and he couldn't meet after.
Right.
Like apparently he had a meeting with somebody, he couldn't go. But I've heard through secondary people that, you know, obviously it was a lot of aggravation, and we'll see where this goes. I don't mm-hmm. know if he's mad. I don't know. I'm sure I'll find out at some point.
Yeah.
But like I said, I went down there today to give him the opportunity to see, does he have anything he'd like to say? He was busy. So I'm sure.
He was getting water dumped on him.
He was getting water dumped on. It was a much better cause than talking to me. So I'm sure I'll find out it at some point. And you know what, Jeff, if he was to be upset, I don't think I could really blame him.
Yeah, no, yeah. I just find it interesting because, like I said, there are times where if you write something or say something about somebody, they'll kind of follow up, and I mean, I always appreciated it. They'd always talk to you about, you know, about hey, you know, just want to let you know this is the way it is, or blah blah blah. There are no hard feelings, whatever. But anyway.
I'm sure we'll talk at some point. I mean, the one thing I would say about him and his statement, the more I really thought about it last night, is every time that I've asked him a question, the answer has turned out to be true.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like when he says what he said yesterday, I don't believe he's lying. I think that my experiences with him is that, and he also did email me back a comment, which was similar to that, although not as strong. He said that, I'm not here for the long term, but I'm committed to this season. So I think that's the truth. I think we're looking at probably one more year, which is a little bit more of a timeline than I reported. But you know, that's where I think it probably is, barring any change, unforeseen change.
What should I make of this NHL draft change? The lottery draft, by the way.
It's funny because I was laughing at this story today because this was one I reported a few months ago.
In your 30 thoughts. In the 30 thoughts. That's
and
right.
When it didn't come true for a while, I had people hammering me and saying, what about that dumb draft lottery report that you came up with? This is what the NHL wanted. And I think what the Buffalo Sabres won, because they fought it very seriously, was that the top three draft picks being involved in the lottery not happening until next year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, basically, the way it's going to go now, it used to be that the first place team had a 25% chance of winning the lottery. It's going to drop to 20. The second place team's percentage was just under 19. It's going to drop to just under 14. So that's going to happen next year. What the Sabres fought very hard against, and something the NHL was considering, was right now the lottery is just for the first pick.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are the worst team in the NHL, the worst you can finish is second in the lottery. Starting next year, the worst you can finish is fourth.
Right.
So they'll do a
Big
lottery
difference.
For the first three. Sorry, that starts in 2016 draft,
right. Okay.
I should say. So that one's been held back for a year. So whoever finishes dead last this year, the worst they can do is whoever doesn't get taken first overall, Eichel right. or McDavid. So... And the Sabres really fought this one hard.
Right.
Their argument was, like, we're legitimately stripping down. You can't do this to us now.
Yeah.
So that part of the thing won't happen until 2016.
Is this going to make it fairer? Fair is probably the wrong word. Is this going to prevent? I think what people don't like what they saw in the NBA this year, where you essentially had six or seven teams sort of falling all over each other to strip down. For the draft. Does this change that, make that a different or a more difficult proposition for a team to pull off?
It sure does, because it used to be the worst you could get was the second pick, and in mm-hmm. 2 years, it can go down to fourth.
Right. So,
I do believe, this was the interesting thing to me about Darcy Regier getting fired in Buffalo, was I believe this was his plan. And they have, he sold them on a plan that this is what we have to do. We have to strip it and start over. And only that way will we be able to be good enough. And I think what happened this year was the ownership was shocked by the way the fan base turned on Regier.
Mm-hmm.
And do I think they disagreed with his plan? No. But I think they realized that he was such a hot button guy there that they had to make a change.
Yeah, it's, like I said, I've kind of struggled a little bit with the whole idea of just of the whole lottery process, because I don't like the idea necessarily of teams being able to stockpile. Not stockpile is the wrong word. I don't like the idea of teams being able to plan things so that they ensure that they get a really good draft pick 3 or 4 years in a row, or 2 or 3 years in a row even. I don't mind if you're going to strip down for 1 year, you know, that's your decision. But I've just always felt there has to be a different way. I mean, I don't know whether you put in a rule that says the same team can't draft first overall in back to back years. Now, then you're getting you're just making it convoluted anything
look
that
what Philadelphia is doing in the NBA.
Yeah.
They're unbearable to watch.
Yeah.
Like, just unbearable to watch.
Yeah.
Like, that to me is one of the, like, if you read about it, like the way it used to be in the NBA,
mm-hmm.
like what the Rockets did for Ralph Sampson and Hakeem Olajuwon, the way it kind of worked out with them,
mm-hmm.
like, that was probably the worst we've seen in our lifetimes until Philadelphia came up this year.
A little bit of breaking news, by the way.
Oh.
Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News,
mm-hmm.
Who covers hockey but also covers baseball, says that Daniel Norris, the Jays pitching prospect who is with Buffalo, will make his last start for the Bisons tomorrow and then be moved into the bullpen, which is exactly what the Blue Jays did with Aaron Sanchez. So my guess is we'll see Daniel Norris up in the majors pitching out of the bullpen probably by next weekend, just in time for the Yankees to come in. That would be my guess. I would think they'd probably makes a start tomorrow. The movement of the bullpen, maybe pitches. It's tomorrow, Thursday. Maybe pitches Tuesday. Yeah, he could be up on the weekend. Not this weekend, but next weekend, pitching for the Blue Jays.
Wow.
Out of the bullpen. So there you go.
Here's another breaking one from the world of hockey. And again, it's not huge, but it's interesting. Doug Wilson and Todd McClellan, the general manager and coach of the San Jose Sharks, have announced the team will enter training camp with no captain and no alternates.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And what is their thinking?
I'm looking to see.
Well, that's fascinating.
I guess they're having a conference call because it's being reported by David Pollock, who's their newspaper guy for the right. San Jose paper, and also Kevin Kurz, who's one of their TV reporters. Pollock says McClellan doesn't call it a stripping of the captaincy and says competition will be open and Thornton, like anyone else, is a candidate.
Oof.
Now, I thought this might happen with everything that's been going on there. The one thing about this is that I believe Thornton will be okay with this because, A, he saw it coming, and, B, he got the captaincy when it was kind of stripped from Marlowe. So right. I think he's seen this before and he understands. But I believe what this is about is that the San Jose Sharks want, like, Thornton has been the alpha male of their dressing room for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I think the Sharks want to see guys like Couture and Pavelski and Vlasic, who may have the right temperament for it, start to take the room.
And, you know, it's an interesting decision. I guess, Elliot, one of the reasons you can do it, too, is I think Joe Thornton's made it pretty clear that he wants to stay in San Jose. So at least maybe Joe Thornton is saying, you know, ideally, it's not, you obviously would prefer to be the captain of the team, but if it sort of makes it a little easier for me to stay where I obviously like to be,
mm-hmm.
then maybe you go ahead with it. And I think you're right, because it's, if you're Joe Thornton, all you've heard for the past 2 years is that something might be happening, something might be happening, something might be happening. Now, if you're Joe Thornton, you're thinking, okay, maybe this is it. If this is the worst thing that's going to happen, I'm going to lose my captaincy or I have to reapply for it or however you want to put it. That may not be the worst thing if you're Joe Thornton, because you're still in San Jose and who knows? The pressure's off. I don't know Joe Thornton that well. Is he, Elliot, you know, there are athletes, there are hockey players who need the C. Mm-hmm. They need the C. Is he the type of guy that needs to see?
I don't think so. I think he's at a point now where he kind of knows the deal about where things are with San Jose. I think it's impossible not to be aware of, you know, what's been talked about and what the possibilities are this summer. I think he really likes it out there. I mm-hmm. think he wants to stay there. Like I said, he's been through this earlier with Marlowe, so he knows the franchise has done it, and he knows it's kind of happened to him with somebody else. I think at the end of the day, the thing that will determine whether or not Joe Thornton stays in San Jose is how the season goes. Do the fans turn on him? If yes, I think he will be willing to go. Is he not playing? Is he benched for long periods of time? Then I think he will be willing to go. But he wants to win there. He wants to be part of the solution. And I think if things kind of go the way regular seasons tend to go to for them, which is very well, I think it's going to be hard to get him to go.
All right. Let me create some trouble for us.
Okay.
I think I'm going to create some trouble. Why? Oh, the Manziel. They got the Manziel salute from our producer, Matt Marchese. Would the Leafs consider doing this with Phaneuf, given everything we've heard?
You know, it's interesting. I heard 2 years ago, a year and a half ago,
mm-hmm.
at the trade deadline, San Jose makes some pretty big moves. They traded Doug Murray and they traded Ryan Clough. And I heard that the Leafs called them and asked about Thornton.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they said, if he's available, we'd like to be interested. Like, we'd like to talk about this with him,
mm-hmm.
You and him. And it didn't really go anywhere. I think the Sharks at the time wanted to shake up their guys a bit, but they weren't interested in trading him.
Right.
I don't know where that is
mm-hmm.
right now. There's, even though Nonis is still there, and he was involved in that, I believe. I just don't know where – it's a question I'm probably going to have to ask over the next little while. Like, if Thornton was available, would you guys have interest in him?
Yeah, I was also thinking another
but
way.
But I know they did a year and a half
right.
ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Fear the Leafs, do you do that with Dion Phaneuf, though?
Isn't there a similar, in some ways
– well, again, this is just based on everything you hear, but the people will say that Dion Phaneuf is not, and I'm not one of those people, but there are people who will say that Dion Phaneuf hasn't been the perfect captain for the Leafs, and maybe if you want to talk about culture change in this organization, in this dressing room, maybe you do something like that with the Leafs.
Well, here's my feelings on Phaneuf, and I know he's a lightning rod here. Number one, he wants to play here. And we've talked about this. Mm-hmm. In Canada right now, if you have guys that like your market and can handle your market, you have to keep those guys.
Yeah.
But I also look at their defense, and it depends on what you get for them, obviously, mm-hmm. if you do trade them. But if I'm looking at guys like Gardner and Riley, the best thing that can happen to those guys is Phaneuf carries the load until they're really ready.
Yeah.
Like if he's not there playing all your tough minutes, who's doing it? And until you can give me a satisfactory answer to that question,
yeah,
I wouldn't trade
That's
him.
Fair. No. Yeah. Totally.
Unless you're getting somebody who can do it.
Yeah, that's totally fair. It's an interesting idea. Doug Wilson and Todd McLellan. So that includes assistant captains.
Yes, all clear.
Or alternate captains, I should say.
I always do assistant captains.
And you know what? And I get, God love him, I get an email from the same guy, and all he says is alternate, period. And I know I'm going to get that email. It's a generational thing. We all grew up. Didn't we all grow up saying assistant captain?
When you're playing minor hockey or when you're playing kids hockey, like, okay, we're going to vote on our captains and assistant captains. It's hammered into you. Of course, I was never either, just so everybody knows.
All right. There you go. I can't believe Richard Deitch is joining us, but he is apparently Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated. Mr. Deitch, congratulations. Two times over, my friend.
Yeah, thanks. What is sleep would be not that this is the greatest analogy, but for any old school film fans, Martin Sheen going up the river to see Brando, sleepless.
Yes.
The world is spinning. He's probably on some kind of narcotic. That's kind of how I pretty much feel at this moment, 24/7. Just not a lot of sleep.
Well, twins, congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations, Richard. And I hope that your twins sleep better than my guy does, and he's about to turn 3.
Oh, wow.
I hope you don't get that.
Yeah, they occasionally sleep, but not always. So it's amazing, but I cannot tell you how much more respect I now have for parents who have sort of just gone through the process of newborns. It's just amazing.
Yeah, the thing I always remember from the birth of our daughter is just being in the room. And I remember that the doctor looked at me and he said, "You would not go through this, would you?" I said, "There's no way in hell I could go through this physical stuff. Are you kidding me?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing.
No way.
Women, the idea of just going through childbirth in itself is just like kind of a miracle. And I think for the most part, women as a sort of a gender are tougher than men. And they probably they were created to be able to do that because they could sort of handle childbirth better than men. But it's, I got to give my wife, total props. She's like, Joachim Noah in the fourth quarter. She's continuing to work very hard. I appreciate it.
Now, Richard, there's something else aside from the birth I wanted to talk to you about. I have to tell you, Richard, of all the people I follow on Twitter, you probably take the most abuse.
Ravel?
Well, yeah, but Ravel is different. Like he's like his personality is such that he's like, I don't care. Like he doesn't think like regular humans do.
He's kind of an Autobot.
Yeah, he's like the brand guy. Brand. He doesn't think like normal people do. Like for people who think like normal people, man, some of the battles you have on Twitter are hilarious.
Yeah, I don't, you'd be surprised. I think generally speaking, most of my interactions on Twitter are really, really positive. And I have a lot of really bright people following me, which is sort of has always been my goal. But it's my own fault sometimes for responding to too many people, but it's amazing. The most kind of benign opinions that you have lead to you know, people defending it like the way the, you know, Red Army defended Moscow in 44. It's just, it's unbelievable. And the other thing, too, is I think, you know, it does prove that people have a lot of passion about broadcasting and about who they watch on TV and the shows they watch. And given that that's sort of my terrain, people are surprisingly passionate about what they see, what they listen to, what they read. And there's not many people doing what I do. So, you know, and I'm very active on Twitter, obviously. So it becomes, sometimes I'm sort of ground zero for all that stuff. But, you know, my mentions for sure are nothing like some others. I mean, if you are a quote unquote, a controversial columnist or someone who's like a contrarian, like for hire, I think those mentions are really bad. And then far worse, you know, having talked to so many women in sports media, what I get is nothing compared to them. I mean, because they get sexist stuff. If you're the double, if you're African American and a woman, you get both race and sexism stuff. So I would say men in sports media don't even have it close to what the women have to face.
You know, I would agree with that, obviously, 100%. The one thing, though, Richard and Jeff, is I'm kind of beginning to think, like, we should stop with the "you should see the abuse I get on Twitter" stuff. Like, I mean, we all get abused on Twitter.
True.
Like, well, you don't not get abused on Twitter. Like, yeah. Whether it's your race, whether it's what you look like, whether it's how heavy you are, whether you've got a receding forehead, whether you're what it's what you report or talk about. I mean, Twitter abuse, it's sad, but it's basically part of reality.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, that's sort of part of being in the media. And, if you're going to sort of hand out shots, you got to take the shot. So I never complain about that. To be very honest with you, and if you guys both follow me, I kind of like sometimes retweeting the blast because they're very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like any time I write about women, it, inevitably within 30 seconds, someone's calling me a feminist. A lot of times, you know, people, if I have like a sort of a take on something, people will say, you know, you're an absolute liberal, blah, blah, blah. And then I'll say, you know, I voted for Bush, and they freak out. Even though whether I did or didn't vote for Bush, who knows? But it's just great. I actually love the idea of sort of retweeting and sending out some of the people who troll you or knock you because I just think it's funny content. I don't, you know, the thing about Twitter that's interesting is so many people take it seriously. Like someone like Rovell, you know, he takes it as serious as like the Fed.
Yeah.
I'm laughing half the time I'm tweeting stuff, including by the way when I'm knocking the Skip Bayless is the world and things like that. I mean,
right.
I have to be insane to, like, you know, go home and be like, you know, I think people sometimes think like I have like a life-size cardboard cutout of Bayless in my house. I can promise you I don't.
I bet Skip does.
I think Skip has I would imagine Skip has a cardboard cutout of Skip.
That's what I meant. Yes, not of you, of himself.
If he has one of me, that's then I'm really taking real estate up in his head, which is great.
There's a lot of, he's the type of guy, he's got a lot of mirrors in his house.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, that's not just him. I think you guys have dealt with a lot of television people, and it's a medium that, I mean, to be very honest, it does sort of attract narcissists and egoists and vanity players. That's not everybody. I don't want to generalize, but part of the profession, and maybe that's what makes people either sort of good or makes people polarizing, is that they have those characteristics. You know, there is something to the idea of you sort of have to be a little bit hubristic to go on television every day, 2 hours a day, 1 hour a day, and have a take on sports, on everything.
Mm.
You know, that in itself is kind of its own hubris in a way.
Yeah. Well.
Which, by the way, will put myself under that as well. I'm not escaping myself from that. There's no doubt. I don't think I'm as narcissistic as a Kardashian, but I definitely have some narcissism in me, no doubt.
Yeah, I think we all have a little bit. We all have a little bit in us.
Bob McCowan does. I agree with
that. No, Bob doesn't at all. Bob doesn't at all. I want to get your take on Johnny Manziel because it's the only thing anybody's talking about. I called him Johnny Bench today, which I thought was particularly witty, but nobody
you
else.
You can't see him patting himself on the back, yeah, right?
Johnny Bench started, though, as a rookie, didn't he?
Oh, be quiet. Yes, he did. You're right. Yeah. Here's what I wanted to talk to you about the whole thing. We all saw him flipping the bird on TV during the game against the Redskins. And frankly, I mean, Richard, I was surprised. I was surprised. Originally, I thought, okay, he's going to get abused. Though people are going to be poking fun at this and blah, 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 blah. But I read some of the stuff that was written and heard some of the stuff that people were saying, and I thought, my God, they're actually taking this seriously, you know? And I mean, this is a league that on the list of issues the NFL has with player behavior, Johnny Manziel's raised middle finger, he shouldn't be first and foremost in a lot of people's minds, should it?
No, I think that's a very good take. In fact, I think that's a really smart take because there's so much hypocrisy about Manziel and his partying. And I mean, he's essentially, to me, he strikes me as kind of an immature, entitled 21-year-old, which makes him, you know, only one of 500 million or whatever in this world.
Yes.
His behavior compared to Ray Rice, compared to people who are actually doing criminal activity, is not even close. So I agree with you. They're totally separate. That said, whether it's right or wrong, there's an old, I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know, there's this old NFL trope that the quarterback of a professional football team is supposed to be the guy who gets to the meeting early, supposed to set the example, supposed to live his life publicly clean. By the way, I don't think every quarterback who even sort of publicly looks clean is per se clean, but you got to play the part. That's mm-hmm. This is this old school NFL, you know, it all flows from the quarterback, and they all these coaches have in mind sort of their prototypical quarterback kind of behavior, and he is not, you know, so far, he's broken the mold on that. He's a guy who sort of clearly does his own thing. He likes to hang out like a lot of 21-year-olds with money do, and it's a very weird situation in Cleveland because it's almost like it's weird. I don't think I've ever seen an organization kind of publicly kind of scold, whatever that word is, a first-round pick who they ultimately hope is their franchise quarterback. Usually, you know, having covered the NFL a little bit and sort of certainly reading, you know, on a daily basis, usually coaches and coaching staffs talk about, you know, even if they're lying, he's, you know, guy's really good for such a young guy. Mm-hmm. He's a sponge. He's listening to everybody in the locker room. You know, he's really good. Like, the opposite's been Manziel. You know, they're leaking out that he's late for meetings. They come out, like, the owner sort of comes out publicly saying he needs to comport himself better. So the way the Browns have handled him is so, this tough love, I mean, on the one hand, I kind of like it because I never see it. On the other hand, it does seem like the wrong play because you ultimately almost feel like you're either going to alienate the player or you're going to create this divide in the locker room, which is Hoyer versus Manziel.
Yeah, and I mean, not only that, this is an organization that it needs something good right now.
And
it really needs something good, particularly at the quarterback position. And that what I found interesting about this, the same thing you did. It's you usually in a situation like that, there will be criticism of a player, but it'll be in an anonymous coach or, you know, one of Manziel's coaches said he needs to start showing up early. But boy, people are putting names to the, you know, people are saying stuff and being quoted on the record about it. It's really odd to see them be that open.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't mean to interrupt you. You're right. I haven't seen it maybe ever or certainly in a long time. And you wonder, you know, what's going to be really interesting is you wonder how he's going to react. The other thing, too, is, you know, you read more about the selection of him. And you wonder, it seems like there was a divide even in the room, mm-hmm. that he was able to convince a couple coaches that, you know, I'm your guy, I want to come to Cleveland, I want to be a star, when there were others there who may not have bought it. And keep in mind, you know, if you remember pre-draft, there were times where people were like, this guy's going to go top five.
Mm-hmm.
And he slipped to 22. And he slipped past some teams that really needed quarterbacks. So, I don't know. I mean, he's one of the more, if the right word is maybe polarizing figures to come into the NFL for a long time. He absolutely, by the way, is broadcast gold. I mean,
yes.
At least in the preseason, yeah. What we've seen, the exhibition games that he's been involved in have been through the roof. I think if he ever gets to play or ever gets to start in Cleveland, those games will do really well. And maybe it's because, you know, he appeared in so many big games in college. You know, CBS, 15 million people watching the biggest SEC game of the week, that so many people already know this guy or have an opinion on this guy compared to somebody like Blake Bortles, who was drafted far, far higher than him.
You know what it is? It's just that, Jeff, I think they hope that all of the craziness would be done once the game started. You can party in the off season, do what you need to do, but once the game started, I think they felt that he would be all serious, and he hasn't been.
Yeah, and I will say this, probably unfairly for him, he will have a very, very short leash if he gets into trouble off the field. And I'm not talking about major trouble.
No.
I'm talking about even if there's photos of this guy, I'm just making this up, Tuesday night at some bar in Cleveland, you know, sort of really just over-the-top drunk, he's not going to get the benefit of the doubt as others might be, because I think there's already a perception in both the public and management's mind that he's already too much of a partier.
Richard, it was good of you to do this today. I know you've got a lot to do. Again, congratulations, and try to get some sleep.
Congrats on the babies.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Take care. That is Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated, father of newborn twins.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work. One more, and you got to play zone.
I like that. That's great. Well, we're going to keep one where you got to play zone. Very good. We're going to keep it on football. Mark Cohan, the commissioner of the Canadian Football League, will join us. He has just announced today that he will not seek a renewal of his contract, which expires next spring. Mark Cohan will tell us why he's making the decision now when Primetime Sports continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more great sports talk on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Very underrated song, by the way. Yeah, Fox on the Run by Sweet. I don't even know if everybody's hearing it. So the Blue Jays won today. They're 2-6 in the road trip. They'll be home tonight. They have the off day. Tomorrow they start a 9-game homestand against Tampa, the Yankees, and the Red Sox on Friday. Big news in the CFL today. Mark Cohan, the commissioner of the CFL, informed the Board of Governors that he will not seek a third term as commissioner of the Canadian Football League. And Mark Cohan's contract expires in the spring. So the Canadian Football League will be looking for a new commissioner. And Mark Cohan, leaves a pretty good legacy. This is a...
League's in good shape.
League's in real good shape financially. Mm-hmm. Compared to what it was when Mark Cohan took over, and there's football back in Ottawa. So there are considerable feathers in Mark Cohan's.
But do you think that he stepped down when he saw the plaid in the Red Blacks helmet?
I don't know. I'm going to ask him. Okay. Mark Cohan joins us in Primetime Sports. Hello, Mark.
Hi, guys. I like plaid. Plaid is very trendy, actually.
I guys
can wear plaid, like you can, you know, if you're up in Northern Ontario, it's, you know, tough, but there's guys walking on Bloor Street in Prada plaid.
I was an Ottawa Rough Riders fan as a kid, and I still think of them as the Rough Riders. I can't help it. Why the decision now, Mark? Why did you inform, A, what are the reasons behind the decision? And secondly, why inform the league now?
Well, I'll answer the. I guess there are a couple of different reasons. Number one, you know, when I started here, almost 8 years ago, and I'm one of the longest serving commissioners in the history of this league, which is amazing how fast time has flown. I said there's a lot of things on my list I want to check off and really improve this league. And, you know, most of those things I've been able to achieve with the support of the governors. And whether it's getting back into Ottawa this year, whether it's a new television deal, whether it's, you know, a stronger labor agreement, whether it's drug testing, you know, whether it's helping build new stadiums. I remember my 100th day report I made to the media. I said, we got to build new stadiums. And we've been successful at doing that across the country. And I looked at it and I said, okay, my term ends in April. I'm 48 years old. I got a lot of energy ahead, you know, a lot more energy in the engine. And probably time for me to think of, you know, about my future and the next move. And I want to give enough runway for our Board of Governors to really take a lot of time to think about who should be the next commissioner. So that's why I've given so much advance notice to the board. So there'll be eventually be a smooth transition.
Mark, do you know what your next move is going to be?
No, I do not. No. I've always confident in my abilities. I'm confident in my track record. That's not being boastful in any way. I'm proud of what we've been able to accomplish here. And, part of me likes the unknown and the challenge. That's a little bit of the entrepreneur in me. And I think we'll see where it takes me.
You know, Mark, by the time you leave, whatever the timeline is, the stadium in Hamilton, by the time you leave, one of the things you're going to have done that I think is really remarkable. I think any commissioner that can accomplish this in the economic climate that we've gone through, deserves credit. You're basically going to have drastically improved or new facilities in 80 of your cities. That's remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, and it's been, you know, a lot of work on the team's part, you know, but we've been working hard. I've been in front of many city councils and provincial premiers and, talking about the strength of the league and the support we need and, you know, talking about promising Grey Cups and, you know, from Winnipeg to Saskatchewan being, under construction to Hamilton coming back to Ottawa. It really was a proud moment, in Ottawa when that stadium opened and there were, thousands of Red Blacks fans there. So it really is, it's not just for the next generation of fans. It's for generations after that. You know, my little girl, who's 8 years old, I think she's the upset one in the family about me leaving this role. But I think she understands and she'll have fun whenever I figure out my next thing.
Just tell her that you think you'll always be able to get tickets and that she'll be okay.
Yeah, I think I'll have to negotiate that deal with the board, but I'm not worried about that.
Mark, when you look at it now, and I think it's every commissioner's wish that they do leave a league in better shape than they got there. For the next person, whether it's Michael Copeland or whoever else it is, what do you think their biggest challenge is going to be moving forward?
I think their challenge is going to be filling up our stadiums. As technology disrupts that experience where young kids today might not sit down and watch, a 2.5-3 hour football game. How do you get them into the stadium? How do you make our stadiums more social? How do you get younger people into the game? How do you get, how do you continue? Like, we're about to release a new PSA about safe contact. How do you get more kids playing the game, which is a long drive. It's a long road ahead in terms of making sure that we get the kids playing the game and engaging young fans, through all the different technology that is out there, whether it's through social media, whether that's through games, whether it's through fantasy football. I think there's a lot of tactical things that they'll have to do. On the football side, I think they should really think about, I don't know if we want to do this, but, do we go to one division? Do you stay as two divisions? Do you start the season earlier or not? Are there rule changes we should consider? If you were eventually going to get into Halifax or a 10th franchise, years down the line, what do we do with, helping grow the Canadian content and strengthening the league at the grassroots level? There's a lot of tactical work that I think, I don't see as many big, home runs, as I would say, like the TV deal, that would be 5-6 years away. But I think there's a lot of tactical things that a new commissioner will really have to focus on, and a lot of it has to do with young people.
Mark, we've got just a minute left, and before you let you run, got to ask you about the Hamilton Stadium situation. Brent's coming back from Newfoundland. He's got his tickets ready for Labor Day. We think we're going to have to go to the HAAA grounds in Hamilton to watch the game. and I'm charging $140 a spot right now.
$60 yesterday.
Their builder, now they're trying to get their permits and some clearances. They've talked about opening up part of the stadium, and they're working hard. I think, by the, end of next week, we'll have some clarity on that. But, they're hoping, and they're moving forward. The team is hoping to, it wouldn't be the whole stadium open, but trying to present the Labor Day Classic there is something that they're striving for.
Mark, it was good of you to do this today. Always a pleasure to talk to you again.
Good luck.
I'm sure we'll be doing it. We'll be speaking again.
I'm around for a while, guys, so I'll be talking to you. Thanks.
Take care. That is Mark Cohan, the commissioner of the Canadian Football League, telling the Board of Governors today that he will be stepping down when his contract expires in the spring. And Elliot, you're right. The league's in a hell of a lot better shape than when he took over.
Yeah, no question about it. And when the financial situation, very good for the owners.
Yeah. Bud Shaw is going to join us. Going to talk a little Johnny Manziel, a little Joe Thornton, Shai Davidi as well. Jays won today. Lots to talk about when primetime continues.